Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Omega Leadership Series show. We are in studio this week once again with best-selling author Lori Beth Jones. Welcome, Lori Beth.
Thank you, Shelley. It's great to be here.
It's always a good day when we can talk about leaders and Jesus all in the same breath.
Yes.
Right. Well, this week you are leading us through a couple of interesting places, these principles in Teach Your Team to Fish. We are looking at still in this section of how Jesus excited his team. And so we're going to jump off in this first principle. He embodied the mission today. And, of course, we love the word mission, and we spend a lot of our time talking about mission and helping other people to talk about mission. And so it's going to be fun to unpack that with you. And then also another principle today is how Jesus managed remote teams through prayer. That's also going to be a fun dialogue with you today. So thank you so much for being here and ultimately for writing this stuff. It is just so rich, Lori. I was working with a team today, again, on some principles around vision and mission, and it is just a powerful tool, a powerful instrument, the word mission. And it is very weighty. And I love how you open this this chapter talking about the word embodiment. You know, how do we embody the mission? And so right out of the gate, to embody means to give physical form to something invisible or incorporeal. Lay that out for us, will you?
Well, when Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life," He was living the mission. He is the mission. He is the Word made flesh. And that's what embodiment means, is when you inhabit it and it inhabits you, it's really being lived through you. And I believe in the book I talk about the fact that they found some garlic containers that predated Christ. Some anthropologists were digging, and they found some garlic containers that were 5,000 years old, and you could still smell the garlic. And that it had saturated into the physicality of the form that was meant to hold it, right? I'm thinking of the story of Elijah, that he embodied the power of God so much so that when a dead soldier fell on his grave, the power was so, you know, was still there so much that he sprung back up to life as if Elijah himself had touched him. So, you know, we live in a physical world and we deal with spiritual things. And so to embody it means that we meld the two, that we are bringing spiritual practices into our physical world through our physical being.
Right, so this word mission and embodiment, and when Jesus said, "Tear down this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up again," you know, it's that same. He was giving a clear message of mission, right? In
right.
This chapter, you talk about that.
Right.
Hmm.
To embody the mission means that you're almost like a hologram of it. You know, the hologram is. It's like DNA, just a little scrap of DNA can tell you everything about that person genetically. The DNA embodies that person. And so it's the same thing in spiritual principles. When we are, you know, are we up there talking about family values and then sleeping with the nanny? You know, that's not embodying anything. That's disconnect. That's hypocrisy. And Jesus hated that. It was what he hated the most. There was only one group of people that Jesus really attacked, and it was the hypocrites.
I'm thinking about a a section here in the book where you talk about true team builders house the mission not only in their bodies, but also in their souls. And so this word embodiment is hitting me kind of in an interesting way right now as I think about it. Because I've always pictured that the soul is the container for where the mission resides. And I was teaching this a few weeks back at a university up in L.A. About mission, you know, to a group of college students. And as we kind of began walking in the path process, talking about the power of mission, it struck me again that the soul, you know, it feels like sometimes when we're when we're talking about the mission process that we are reaching into the soul of an individual. And so I love this word embodiment and this space right here in the book that the soul is where it really lives. It resides there. And that's why I think it can't be fake. You know, it can't be just a contrived mission that hangs on the wall or, you know, as you say in the book, we put the Yankee hat on, but are we really a Yankees fan?
Right.
Yeah. Very interesting.
You know, I'm thinking of the painters, the Impressionists and the Renaissance painters who painted the religious figures, and they had a halo, you know, painted around that show that this was a holy person. And I know we've talked about this in another show, but there is a radiance that emanates from people who are joyous. You know, people can sense it when you walk in the room.
Right.
And so if you embody it, and I think I tell the story in there that of a time I was doing a talk in Acapulco, and I was waiting for my time, and I was listening. I was actually listening to the speaker, but being a wind, I was kind of distracted. And there was a man sitting next to me, and he wasn't wearing socks, and his foot kind of kept right up to my knee. And, you know, it was very casual. And so at one point, I wanted to reach over and actually write the word joy on his ankle, you know, like a kid just playing, whatever. But I just really had to physically restrain myself from reaching over and writing the word joy on his ankle. So after the speaker ended, I confided to this man the urges that I had been repressing about tattooing his ankle with the word joy. And he laughed and laughed and laughed, and he said, that's actually my last name. And it was such a mixture of the fact that he embodied his name, because I sensed somehow that I could even get away with doing that because he was a playful person. You know, it was just an embodiment of someone who was living his name.
Right, right. Yeah, and it is that powerful, you know. And I think I think your life and your message and ministry has been focused around, you know, this whole concept, Lori, about why mission is so important. Talk to us for just a few minutes about when you were running that ad agency and you changed the one word from excellence to connection. Talk to us that shift that happened for you, you know, in the mission process.
Oh, boy, that brings back memories. Well, I was living with my ad agency for excellence, excellent products, excellent services, you know, excellent people. But my mentor and friend Catherine challenged me, and she said, well, exactly what does that mean? You know, are you willing to die for excellence? Excellent what? Excellent truffle? You know, an excellent wine? What does that mean? And so the way I thought about it, I said, I really want to be about divine connection. I want people, whatever they do, whether they come in touch with me or my speeches or my books or my products or my services, that they touch God, that they are reminded to connect with God, or that they go deeper with their connection with God. And so I shifted the mission to be divine connection. It was a huge, you know, it was like a two-word, from one word to two words, but it totally shifted my career focus, my emphasis in my writing, my life.
Mm. Yeah, and that's a powerful story and a true story, and you have embodied that practice, you know, over the years of helping people get clear by just changing one word, sometimes maybe two words in their mission statement that reaches into the soul and causes them to leap forward into this new space, a new life, a new vision, a new path. And it is a beautiful thing when when mission is embodied like that. So thank you for writing that, and thank you for living it and modeling it and showing us how, you know, that mission impacts. In the questions, Lori, just a couple minutes here, you talk about if you had to draw a symbol of your mission on your ankle, what would it be? I love the story in the book, and I think it was a picture of a heart with the word joy or something. I don't remember exactly how you stated it. But what would be the symbol on your ankle, Lori?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a very good question. Well, it would be the wind fire symbol from the Peps. It would be the three wavy lines, meaning the messenger, and the triangle, which is the focus of fire, focare, bringing it to the point. So, you know, I'm a passionate messenger, so that would be my symbol. And while we're talking about embodying a mission, I'm reminded of the pastor. Shelley, you were at that conference when we met in Dallas, and she came to us and said that she had been going through the mission process, and she's all about hospitality, and so she wanted to teach hospitality and celebrate hospitality, and she wrestled with the word embody, and so finally she put embody hospitality. And then that night she was at a gathering where they were hosting people from a foreign country who didn't have a place to stay. I mean, it was a party, and she was looking around thinking, well, surely somebody's going to invite these people to spend the night. And she thought about her mission statement being embodying hospitality, and she stepped up, and she said, she's kind of a shy person, and she said, I never would have done that. And so she stepped up and invited these people to stay in her home, and it totally transformed her ministry and her life, and they ended up, you know, asking her to be United States director of this really growing program in a foreign country. And she said, if I had just picked another word, you know, like teach, celebrate, and something else, what's a good one? You know, love or encourage hospitality. Okay, look at the difference between those two words. To encourage hospitality, she could have gone up to someone and say, Betty and Jim, I think you guys should host these people. But when she picked the word, when she picked the word embody, there was no place to go but her.
Right. That's powerful. I'm sitting here remembering that story and how moved she was when she began sharing it at the conference. I think that was in January or February, if I remember right.
Right.
But what a powerful example of embodying the mission that she gave us, for sure. That was definitely a beautiful time. There's one more question, Lori, and we'll close and jump into the next principle here. But I love this. Is your current mission exciting enough to emblazon on every cell in your being? If not, go find one that is.
That's a good one.
It is good. It's a great question, and you know, with that action right behind it, it's like mission isn't something that you just do one time and you're going to forget about it, you know,
right,
next week.
Mission accomplished, right?
Yeah, it's really Mission Impossible. it should be, wow, how is my mission showing up today, and how is it going to help me conquer, you know, whatever giant is facing me, or challenge, or opportunity, or whatever that looks like. So I love how you close that chapter out is, if it's not exciting you anymore, go find one that is, right? So very well done, very well done. This next principle on prayer, Lori, you know, prayer is one of those kind of sticky words sometimes that some people, they want to get close to, you know, because they have the gift of prayer or the gift of intercession, or they love praying for people. And then there's folks that, you know, they would just as soon let somebody else pray, you know, whether it's for dinner or for global, you know, causes. Talk to us for a second just about the concept of prayer in the life of, you know, how a leader would use it to excite a team. How does that work?
Well, I think you're right to say that prayer is a sticky word or a funny word. You know, Jesus had some choice words to say about praying. The scribes and the Pharisees made a big show about praying, and he was not impressed. And he said, God's not impressed by people who wail in the public square and, you know, cry on cue and all those different things. He said, you know, when you pray, go into your closet, go into your secret space and commune with God and entreat God and recognize God, that prayer, it's an embodiment, that your life is a prayer. And perhaps our listeners, and I know I can think of times when we've heard singers on stage and you suddenly realize the song has taken them over. You know, it's the difference between singing a song and letting a song be sung through you. That's prayer. I sent a picture, a close-up I'd taken of a purple flower, and I sent it to my friend Catherine, an iPhone picture. And the close-up is so close that you're looking at the little stems or whatever, and the purple folds out across the entire screen. And so she wrote back and she said, I want to lay on that petal and become that color. And I thought, that is poetry. And I think that's prayer. When we want to lay on that situation and become it, become one with it, become one with the healing. You know, Jesus wept at funerals. He became one with that situation, and his tears were his prayer.
Wow. That's rich. You expand on this a little bit more, the same direction that you were just talking about, that you say that not all prayer has to be expressed verbally and openly. And you touched on that just for a second, but in here you talk about this person, Donna, who was really called on to be a prayer person for the conference. And she gathered a team of prayers, and they prayed for about 12 hours prior to an event that a pastor was coming to speak, well-known, whole lineup of people coming to speak. And do you remember this story, Lori?
No. Go ahead.
Well, she gathered this team. They prayed for 12 hours, and then they went, you know, to their rooms, you know, at the hotel, and rested and waited for the next day to arrive. But this pastor, he says that Donna said she wouldn't speak here, but I'm going to ask her to say a few words anyway. And so Donna gets up to the microphone, and she just waved it at the crowd, the microphone. And people began instantly falling to their knees.
Oh,
within minutes, the entire audience fell to their knees in tears and began beseeching the Lord, you know, to come into their hearts. And this pastor is just in awe, right? And then she quietly leaves the stage, and, you know, she just looked at the pastor and smiled and says, you know, revival did come to that town, and I never did speak out loud. I mean, it's this compelling story here, right in the middle of this principle that you're talking about. These, you know, Jesus, in this chapter, you talk about that how he managed teams through this kind of remote teams through prayer. Is the title of this principle in this chapter, but it's prayer isn't always that physical, tangible kind of expression. But wow, when it shows up in something like that, you just sit back and you think, wow, I want to pray like that, right?
Right, right.
but it's also, you know, it's also a gifting. It's also part of that embodiment of a mission that we just talked about previously. And so when you're working with the team, some of your team, Lori, is scattered all over the country and international places that are teaching others about their mission, about their purpose, about their calling. And we often pray for people that are on our team spread out everywhere. But what is it about that kind of prayer, that remote prayer, that causes people to connect?
Well, because we are dealing with principalities and powers, and we are dealing with, you know, it's like even right now while we're talking, we're tuned into a certain frequency through the internet. But there's other frequencies going on right now that we're not picking up. You know, I could turn to 98.1 on my dial and I'd be listening to a jazz station. But if I turned to 98.3, I don't get anything. So
right.
prayer is, you know, the force of God, the power of God, the Spirit of God suffuses everything. It's always there, but we need to tune into it in order to make that connection. So, and I
how
read
often?
Somewhere that... Huh?
No, go ahead.
I read somewhere that prayer isn't for the heart of God. Prayer is really for our heart. God is always
right.
willing to act and listen and respond. But if we don't ask, we can't receive. Jesus said that too.
Mm-hmm. You have some powerful questions at the end of this chapter as well, Lori. And I love this first one. What is your prayer range? You know, some people say, well, my prayers aren't going to go higher than the ceiling. And I'm like, okay, well, I want the next person in line then. you know, I want somebody that can bust through the ceiling, right, and get to the
right.
can get into the throne room. But that is a powerful question. You know, what is your prayer range? What are you asking us?
Well, I think there's a story in the chapter about that, that somebody was joking about his prayer range was limited to the ceiling.
Yeah.
And so, really, you know, I think about Nehemiah, and he's such an inspiration to me, that he asked how his countrymen were doing. You know, he went way beyond his own personal needs. He was actually a slave. He didn't say, his prayer wasn't, Lord, set me free from slavery, and I hate wine. If I have to serve one more cup of wine, I'm going to throw up. You know, it wasn't that. It was like, how fair, my brethren, how are they doing? His prayer range was so powerful that it really saved the Jewish nation. They traced the creation of the wall as the recalling of Judaism to its roots, because they had a place to gather. They weren't scattered after his prayer. And so what is our prayer range? It's like, oh, Lord, help me get this parking place. Or I can't believe I'm standing in line at the DMV, you know, that type of thing. Or is it for the concerns of of others.
Wow. What are the examples, obviously in this particular chapter you use John 18, my kingdom is not of this world. Jesus prayed in the garden, you know, let this cup pass from me. Jesus prayed that that those that he had trained and spent time with and poured himself into would maintain their mission and would maintain their focus. So Jesus prayed for his team. Any of those examples stick out to you, Lori, or can you think of one that a different one where Jesus prayed for his team?
Well, he was constantly in prayer, and I was reading something just this morning that when he prayed, he always gave thanks that it was answered. You know, he said, I and the Father are one, and so he was in such connection that he didn't have to wrestle with God except when it came to his own crucifixion. That's the only time we have him wrestling with something. The rest of the time it was giving thanks. I give thanks that this is healed. I give thanks that this person can get up and walk. I give thanks. You know, I think that prayer is us going from the seeming reality of our circumstance into the absolute eternal knowingness of God.
Well, yeah, like I said, when we started this topic, it's one of those sticky words in our in our theology. I think that we do not maybe pay enough attention to. Not that we don't pray, I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
We obviously pray at least every Sunday, right?
Right.
When Christians come together. There's global days of prayer, you know, around the country, and prayers for the sick and prayers for abuse and poverty. And but, wow, I'm just sitting here thinking about maybe we need that more. Maybe our focus and our emphasis as leaders, praying for each other, praying for teams, praying for government, business, education, things going on in our society. Maybe we don't focus our prayers enough on that. I'm not sure.
I'm sure we don't. I'm thinking of Mayor Mo that was a little Irish woman that was a former PE teacher that got frustrated because she couldn't get a city building for a program she wanted for the school. So she got so mad she ran for city council and won, and then she was so effective with city council they elected her mayor. And she would probably still be mayor today. Her approval rating was like 87% when she left. But California was having a drought. San Diego was having a drought. And so she gathered all the religious leaders, and she asked them to pray. She asked everybody in the city to pray for rain. Now, today she would have been the laughingstock, but back then people were desperate, and it rained, and it rained, and it rained, and it was just such a, you know, she didn't see a separation between the need of the land and the power of God. And she saw her voice as being important in the voice of other leaders. And so, it's one thing to stand up.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's one thing to stand up and say at the end of a political speech, God bless America. You know, God bless America.
Yeah.
But are we blessing America? And when we embody our mission, then we become the prayer.
Beautiful. Lori, we've got about less than 10 seconds. As leaders, Omega leaders, leaders of teams, leaders of churches, businesses, organizations, how often should we be praying?
Daily, hourly, constantly, in all things.
Amen.
Amen.
And so be it.
Thank you
so much, Lori, for being on the show today, for your time and for your words of refreshment and encouragement. Next week, I think you are traveling, and so we will be off the air next week, but we will be back hopefully the following week. So safe travels to you.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Shelley.
All right. Bye-bye. Take care. Bye-bye.